We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also very happy to have back on the program once again Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she is here, and we talk about things that grow in the home landscape. Trees, shrubs, flowers, stuff you can eat, stuff that's just pretty. We can do houseplants. We can do any of that. We can do some troubleshooting. So, again, if you have some sort of problem, give us the best description of the plant and the problem, and Sandy will see if she can help you out. There maybe are also still people who are thinking about planting things, and you can do that. In fact, we got an email from somebody. We'll see if we can respond to that. And questions are welcome here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's the local number. Toll-free, 800-222-9455, and you certainly can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. Thank you very much
for being here. Not exactly gardening weather, though, huh?
Well, it's a little warm. Yeah. It's a little on the warm side, and when you get the heat index of 100, you really don't want to be spending a whole lot of time.
It's morning
there.
Gardening. If you can garden in the morning.
Well, that's just the thing. Yeah. If you get into the coolest part of the day. A couple of weeks ago, I had to do some stuff, and the grass really needed to be cut. So Sunday morning, I was up there because I figured that was going to be my best chance.
Yeah. I bet your neighbors loved you.
I didn't hear anything from them. Oh, it wasn't that.
Later.
Dawn or anything, you know. And everything is starting to take on that kind of ragged late summer look.
Us or the plants?
It has.
Oh, okay.
Well, actually, now that you mention it, I was thinking about the plants, but yeah, if you look at me, I'm also got that kind of ragged late summer look. And it's been, I'm sure that it's been above normal temperature and below normal rainfall, at least in Champaign-Urbana, I'm sure it is. And stuff to me looks like it's starting to look a little stressing.
And definitely people would notice that. And it really is one of those things, even if you get a chance to water, you'll notice the plants, really you're still kind of in maintenance mode at this point. They're really not necessarily growing a lot unless they really love this weather. I have some tropical plants, like my bananas are loving this. You know, a little extra water and all this heat, they're happy. So there are some plants that actually do well in this really hot temperature.
Okay. Otherwise, are there some particular things that you say really you do want to keep an eye on? Or maybe people know what those things are.
Yeah, and they may. And then probably more than likely it'd be those shade-loving, I would say probably more of those shade-loving plants, because typically most of the shade-loving plants also like moist soil. So there's usually the two of those together. So if you have especially shade-loving plants that are maybe underneath a maple tree or maybe other areas where it's really tends to be a dry shade anyway, you'd really want to make sure that you water those. And also just any plants that you had or brand new this year, or even if it's a tree or shrub that was brand new maybe a couple of years ago and is still a fairly new plant within the first 3 years of its life being in your yard, I would really watch those and make sure that you give them a thorough watering at least once a week.
Okay. We've got some callers. So we'll start in line one, and this is someone in Champaign. Line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Say, Sandy, I was wondering what's the best way to control my crabgrass?
Wow, you and everybody else. It really has been a great year. We're talking about plants that grow well this year. Crabgrass has done marvelous, which I think you've probably noticed. I think there's a few things going on. Crabgrass is an annual grass, so it has to come back every year from seed. So those plants that you're seeing right now are not going to be there. Are not going to be the same plants as you'll have next year.
Okay.
But they set down lots and lots and lots of seeds.
Yeah.
Even after you mow, you'll notice that they tend to set seed even low. So, okay, so what do? The nice thing is that we are entering a period now where actually you can do a pretty good job of seeding lawns. Usually once we get into the middle of August into September is a good time to reseed. So generally what we're looking at, if you have an area where there's just a ton of crabgrass, maybe nothing else, you may want to go ahead. You have a couple of options. You may want to go ahead and kill it off with some of the just non-selective herbicides like glyphosate, Soldier's Roundup, and any number of things. You may want to do that and just sort of take care of that. Wait a week or so. Once it dies down, then you can actually reseed right into that, you know, once you get rid of some of that plant material. There are some post-emergent, actually after the crabgrass already has come up, there are some post-emergent herbicides that are okay. Usually the ones that are the best ones are generally the ones that are available to professionals, unfortunately, some of those chemicals. But generally, even if you kill it off post-emergent, actually kill off the grass that's there now, you're still left with these open areas. You're always going to have problems with weeds if you don't get some seed in there. So that's why I think people should just concentrate on, okay, how can I get good seed in there? Because as long as you have open soil area, you're going to get, especially crabgrass. Crabgrass needs light to germinate. The seeds need light to germinate.
Sure.
A thick lawn is not going to let crabgrass seeds germinate.
Okay.
So that's why we have to think about that right now, through the month of September, really thinking about how can you invigorate the lawn, maybe do some overseeding, you know, get some, just thicken up the lawn somehow.
Okay.
And also, I will tell you with crabgrass, too, it tends to be less under higher mowing heights. So if you start getting, I don't know how high you mow your lawn, but usually 2.5 to 3 inches is actually a pretty good height that it generally, again, sort of covers up those areas so that crabgrass seeds can't quite germinate. So that can help, too, with a little higher mowing height.
Okay. And I guess I was also wondering, you know, you go to the store and you see all these fertilizers on the
thing.
You're supposed to fertilize it every month or something. But when or how many times would you fertilize your lawn?
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those things you really have to think about. There's no sense in fertilizing a lawn in the summertime, especially the summer that we've had, if you're not also irrigating. Because fertilizer, you know, the grass can't do anything with the fertilizer if it's not actively growing, if there isn't moisture there. So there's no sense in fertilizing at that time unless you're going to irrigate. So generally we say, you know, it depends on how green you want your lawn, how much moisture there, if you're going to irrigate. Probably our next fertilization we usually think about is Labor Day. Usually the month, the first really week or so of September is a good time to be thinking about fertilizing. And that's probably one of the best. If you're not going to fertilize any other time, all year long, that Labor Day, first week of so of September is really the best fertilization to put down if that's the only one you're going to do.
All right.
Is that help a little bit?
Okay. Yeah, very helpful.
Yeah, and I would think next year you may want to think about a pre-emergent type crabgrass control in the spring. So about the middle of April or so, think about a pre-emergent crabgrass control at that time, and that will help those seeds, you know, that are going to try and germinate to keep those from coming up. And so you kind of it's kind of a two whammy thing.
Okay.
Okay, good luck. There's a lot of other people out there. I've seen lots of crabgrass this year.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. Another Champagne person here. This is line number two. Hello.
Yes, hello. Mm-hmm. I just had two questions. One is interesting hearing about crabgrass, the perennial problem. I have some Lamium in the backyard as ground cover that's done very well the last couple of years, and this year there's a large section of it just died back to nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's been irrigated. I don't understand because it's done very well, you know, this year, though I get a lot of dieback in certain areas. It just totally, it was growing over everything, doing very well, and it just died back to nothing, just disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
The other question I might have is on bluegrass. I've got some sections in my lawn that perennial just die back, and I've it's not grubs, and I've also treated it with a fungicide, which is somewhat helpful, but I get these same areas that die back. I've done everything from resodding it to ripping it all out and reseeding it. I've done it about 2 or 3 times, and I still have the same problem in the same area. So your thoughts on either of these things would be quite helpful.
Yeah. I would say if people aren't familiar with Lamium, it's also sometimes called dead nettle, which is a horrible name for it. But at any rate, Lamium, it's actually a very nice ground cover, as you found out. And it's generally good in, actually, it does very well in shadier spots. But it also does fairly well with some moisture into sunnier spots. The thing I noticed with that this year, and I don't know if this is necessarily true with your plot, they do get some leaf spot diseases where the leaves themselves will kind of just, they'll get these spot brown spots on them, and then they'll kind of just completely die back, almost like they sort of melt out for the most part. But usually the stems stay alive. So I don't know if you're noticing that with yours, that it just seems to be a leaf issue. So I'm not sure I'd necessarily give up on it, and it does grow so well that it'll probably fill in those spots.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It's even been growing in an area that I have a ground cover, which is pine bark chunks.
Oh, uh-huh.
You know, and even that, it just covers it all up.
Right.
This died back totally. In fact, even the stems have disappeared.
Oh, in a couple of different spots?
Yeah, a couple areas.
Right.
It just like it was totally covered with Lamium. And now that you can't even see it, and there's one or two spots that still survive, but the big areas are just totally gone. It's really strange.
Right. Did it start around the 1st of July or so, about a month or so?
Yeah, it started about a month or so ago.
Yeah. You know, I think what we noticed, if you remember way back when in June, we actually had a fairly wet June. And unfortunately, we saw some real disease issues because of that when we have this constant moisture. So I think probably what you've seen is just the fact that it got a little bit of these, you know, it gets a number of a lot of plants get a number of different diseases, but this one can get some leaf spots as well as some, even I noticed lots of botrytis, which is on a bunch of different plants. And it'll actually go from the leaves and actually kill the stems off. And so I really think probably what happened is we kind of set the stage for a fungal disease issue come in June because it was so wet. Then we get these really hot temperatures in July, and then the plant just kind of crashes. So I'm not sure this is going to be a regular problem for you, so I'm not sure it's going to require any kind of fungicide or anything, but I have a feeling that's probably what's happened with that one.
Okay.
As far as the bluegrass, if you have these spots that just to seem, they just don't want to grow anything, and I assume you've sort of thought back through, is there anything that could be underneath it, like septic or anything like that that could be underneath it?
No, that's not. It's grown real well. And a couple of years ago, I had some problems, and I dug it all out, put new topsoil down, and reseeded it. Grew back, looked fine, and then summer died out again. So I got frustrated. I actually had a guy come in and lay new sod down, ripped it all up again, and then that died out. And I ripped it up again, put new soil down, and reseeded it. So I've been pretty persistent on this.
No kidding.
And, my neighbors are laughing at me.
Oh, no, we're not. We're laughing with you.
Oh,
we're laughing with you.
It's the same area. Yeah. Other areas seem to be okay. It's so strange, and it's like in a parkway. So
it's not too wet.
Yeah, no. And I've been, I used to fertilize quite frequently, and I've cut back this year. I mean, I used to fertilize a little bit every month, and then I would water it pretty well. And with the new water bills, I've been rethinking that policy a little bit.
Right.
I don't want to take your time. It's kind of frustrating having these problem areas, you know.
I would think of a couple things. One is you may want to, if it's starting to die out again, you may want to take a sample to the, where are you located? Are you
here? I'm in Champaign, yeah.
Okay. You may want to take a sample to the plant clinic, the U of I plant clinic that's 1401 St. Mary's Road.
Okay.
And see if they can figure out, because there are some fungal diseases, summer patch and a few issues like that. There are actually these perennial problems. Now, you've done everything that we typically would think of would take care of that, as in reseeding, resodding, all those kinds of things. But, you know, maybe you really have enough of an issue there that you're getting that. So that you could at least sort of rule that out. The other thing is this a brand new property or anything?
No. I've been here 20 some odd years.
Okay. So you know there's nothing like 6 or 8 inches below this?
No.
Okay, that would keep things from, That would be my biggest thought, is just think about if there's a fungal issue, and then if there is, there are some resistant varieties of different fungal diseases, so then you could get in some resistant varieties.
I tried some MACOB, I think it is, and also some PMCB, you know, both of those is fungal.
Right, but I will tell you, most of the time, by the time we see a fungal disease, it's too late to apply a fungicide.
Okay. Thank you very much for your help. I enjoyed listening
good
to
luck.
The program.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Our guest this morning in this hour of Focus is Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here and answers questions on lawn and garden care. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Champaign County is up next here, line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I'm wondering if it's possible to divide up coral bells the way you would hosta or you know, other plants like that.
Absolutely. And coral bells or hookera, hookera, however people want to pronounce it, actually is one of those that does better if you divide it periodically, because it tends to get all these little clumps and it'll kind of look not so great. So I would divide it probably a little early right now. You certainly could do it around in September or next spring in April.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, I have a lot of hosta that, and for the most part, it's doing very well, but I have a small stretch in front of my porch that recently the leaves, it's a variegated hosta, and the leaves have started turning yellow along the outside edges of both leaves and then just kind of yellowing in towards the center, and they've just been kind of withering away.
Right.
Do you have any guess what that might be?
Right. And I assume you've ruled out the whole drought issue and all that kind of stuff, that it's too dry.
Well, you know, I've been trying to keep them watered, but
right.
you know, I know it's that they've gotten dry, but the others are doing okay.
Right,
but
right.
These are the spot for natural water.
Right. So certainly, obviously, heat, drought, all those kinds of things can certainly cause those symptoms. But I will tell you that hostas do get a couple of different disease issues, fungal disease issues. And that's certainly always possible. Usually it's not to the point where you have to worry about it and actually have to use a fungicide or anything like that. And just as I mentioned before, you often, by the time we see a fungal disease going on, it's often too late to actually use a fungicide. But it alerts us for next year. So it's one of those things
okay.
that, again, you might want to do. I don't know, you can either bring it into our office at the extension office or, you know, take a sample at a plant clinic and, you know, if you want to pursue it further to see if it isn't a fungal disease, because there are a couple of diseases that certainly could cause that.
All righty.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Bloomington, Indiana is next. Line 4. Hello.
Hi. I want to talk to you about my muskmelons. I've had a muskmelon disaster, and when I tell you all the problems that were potential, maybe you'll think I deserve a muskmelon disaster. But here's what I did. I wish you would evaluate what I did wrong or how many things I did wrong.
You want this on air? Okay, go ahead.
first thing I did, I used seeds just that I got from muskmelons that just came from the grocery store. That they weren't, I guess they weren't designed for this part of the country. Well, maybe they were, or maybe they weren't.
Right.
They were just commercial muskmelons.
Right.
And I grew them in my backyard, and my backyard, we have a beautiful neighborhood, but large trees, so mm-hmm. they only get about 5 hours of direct sun a day. That's the best I can do. The trees are large, and they cast mm-hmm. a lot of shade, and mm-hmm. they're beautiful trees, but they don't allow much sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
I planted these muskmelons in a grassy area, but I covered up the grass where I planted the melons. I covered up the grass in a little square there for the melons. I put black cloth down so the grass wouldn't grow.
Mm-hmm.
And but even so, when I cut the grass around them, I have to move some of those muskmelon stems. In other words, I have to move them, and then I have to move them back. And I also discover that when that black cloth is in direct sun, it gets pretty warm.
Yeah, it does. Isn't necessarily bad for them. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Now my muskmelons, my poor muskmelons, I've got some muskmelons. They've developed some melons, all right, but the leaves have become rust-colored. They have rust-colored spots and wilted, and some of the plants are really badly wilted.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any hope?
I do give you major kudos for trying. Oh, my gosh. Because, you know, they really don't – they need full sun. I mean, so you're really sort of dealing with the situation here where obviously you can't do a whole lot about the whole sun issue. So I give you kudos for trying. A few things. They do get – actually, people might be surprised that muskmelons, actually all those, cucumbers, zucchini, actually all those guys, they get a lot of insect and disease problems. They're not the easiest things to grow organically, at least here. So I will tell you that there's certainly a lot of pressures along those lines. So it wouldn't surprise me if you get some issues with these guys. They can get squash bugs. They can get bacterial wilt. There are, which would certainly cause wilting and dieback and all those kinds of, you know, not so good things. The other thing is, as far as using the seed from the commercial melon, you know, it's not necessarily a good idea, as you've kind of hinted on, in the fact that, you know, because these guys actually cross-pollinate quite readily, and since we don't know exactly how these things were grown, once you save that seed, you're actually saving that, you know, your whatever that cross was that happened
yes.
with that flower, you've now, you know, you're basically planting out its progeny. So we don't even know exactly if it's going to be... And it probably isn't going to be exactly what you purchased as that melon from the store. So generally with all those guys, muskmelons and cantaloupe, all those guys, generally we recommend that you do get a seed, just a named seed variety, and then you'll know that that's what you're getting.
Right.
So I will tell you all that. So I'm not sure. I mean, I think you've done the best you can for the situation that you have. Beyond that, I'm not sure what else I can tell you with that. If we had a better idea, maybe what disease or what kind of issue, I'd certainly be looking for squash bugs. They're going to be on the undersides of the leaves. I'd be looking at those guys. Striped cucumber beetles can be an issue on the flowers. But it's great you've got a few of them that are developing. So maybe you'll end up.
These are rust-colored spots on the leaves. The leaves don't die right away.
They just have spots.
Pretty soon they start to wilt.
Yeah, I don't know, rust-colored spot necessarily. I don't know. That'd be one of those things I'm afraid I'd either have to see or see a picture of it. I have a feeling it's probably one of the fungal diseases that's probably come in, a fungal leaf spot disease that's come in on that. So, I'm not sure we're at the point now where you have enough time where you could go ahead and spray them and have it make it do any good for you. So I'm not sure I'm helping too much, but hey, I'm cheerleading for you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it very much. Thank you for your help.
Good luck. Right,
thank you. We are getting close to the midpoint here. Sandy Mason is with us. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension, Champaign County. Monthly on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care. We have several questions here. Let me see if I can get in one. Someone in advance sent us this by email, and I want to make sure that we do get to the question. And the person who was interested in whether you could recommend some shrubs that can tolerate being in an area that floods twice a year for about 10 days each time. And apparently also it's pretty shady. So you need something that's able to put up with that kind of flooding and is shade tolerant. And he goes on to say that currently he has some cranberry bushes in part of this area where it is sunny. And they seem to be doing just fine. But he is not sure whether those particular plants would tolerate shade or not. So what do you think?
Well, when he says cranberry bushes, I assume he means cranberry viburnum. It's probably, I assume that's what he's talking about. And they'll do okay. They'll certainly do well in partial shade. Long periods of flooding, I have a feeling, are going to be a big issue for them because most of the viburnums don't tolerate flooding. They'll tolerate moist soils, but flooding, not so much. So it may be, we don't get his description, but I assume this must be in a floodplain area or something where you just typically, but you may find that maybe the cranberry bush viburnums or any of the viburnums you might be able to put on the edge of that where they're going to be moist but not necessarily completely flooded. Now, we can't always guarantee how high the water is going to go, obviously. So I would start looking for some of the native. There's lots of native shrubs that live in those floodplain areas that we have around here that would typically live in those kind of situations. And some of them people may not be all that terribly familiar with, but there's certainly one called buttonbush, which actually is really a nice native shrub, and you can get it. You might have to look a little bit. It has an interesting flower, but also just kind of this very interesting kind of a seed, you know, roundish seed-looking fruit on it, which is kind of fun. So this might be one. So buttonbush I would certainly think of. There's certainly actually some other plants. There's winterberry, Ilex verticillata. It's actually a type of holly. Winterberry is actually a really good one. It has beautiful red fruit on it, quite lovely. So you might think about those. Also even there's itea. And one called it's Henry's Garnet Itea, which is another native plant that does very well in these kind of flooded situations. Even elderberry is one that's native and actually can really tolerate moist soils very well. But we have some ornamental of these plants, Sambucus, that really actually do very well, the elderberry and emerald lace, and there's a bunch of them now that are really quite attractive. And also even willows. And, you know, we think of willows being trees, but actually there's some shrubby-type willows that do quite well in these kind of wet areas. Summer sweet clethra is another one that does well in that kind of shady, moist kind of situation. So I think it may be one of those that you just kind of have to look at some of those native floodplain type of plants, and I think you'll find that there's some really nice selections there that are attractive, and you can actually get them in the trade as well. Chokeberries, I think, is another one that's really pretty. It has a nice, also has a nice fruit set on it. So there's some things out there. You may have to do a little bit more searching to find those plants, but they're certainly out there. I think what you'll notice with some plants is they tend to flower better the more sun they have. So that would be the one thing. Sometimes there's a little bit of trade-off. They live in the shade fine, but they don't necessarily flower well. But I think the ones I mentioned should give him some ideas on what to look for.
All right, very good. Hope that helps. On back to some other callers. And the next in line would be in Champaign, line one.
Hello.
Yes.
How are you?
Good.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a devastating problem in my backyard, which for 10 years was totally shady. And then I think it was 2-3 years ago, a storm came and took this humongous umbrella of a hard maple tree or something. It took it away.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, this yard that, you know, nothing was higher than 2 feet tall, I don't think. This year, I've got like 8 feet tall things. I don't know anything about gardening except looking at it, and I feel like I'm in some kind of wonderland of flower. I don't even know what
jungle
these are, but it's amazing. But the thing that I'm so worried about are like 12 or 14 hostas, which now that the sun is coming farther up in the sky this is not good. I'm almost thinking somebody who loves hostas needs to come and get them and give me something that grows in the sun in exchange. But
an intervention?
Yeah, I need an intervention. It makes your heart break what's going on here.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to do. First of all, you know, if I have a little bit of shade near the back wall of a fence. When do you transplant these things? I don't even know how to divide them, let alone transplant them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The leaves are just, some of them are totally bleached out.
Yeah, probably.
And then for the most part, they're very dried out and burnt,
mm-hmm.
and I'm afraid to cut them for fear that I'll expose the very bottom ones that are still green.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you've hit upon something. It's that point. This is going to be a regular battle if you don't get them into some shade. So if you feel like you have at least a little bit of shade, and if they get morning sun, but then late afternoon shade, a lot of hostas can tolerate that just fine because it's that early morning, cooler sun, and they're okay with that. But it sounds like they're really getting that late afternoon sun, what's going to burn them up.
And they're in the sun now.
Well, it'd be one of those things that you really need to think about moving them or giving them away, as you say, to someone who has more shade. You could certainly do that. Yeah, actually, you could do that now.
You can?
Yeah, August through September, for the most part, you can go ahead and do that with hostas. And
some of them are, like, huge.
Right.
They're like,
Right.
What about those? Is that, like, a dividing issue
Yeah, once you dig them up, they actually have fairly obvious separate crowns. Once you dig them up, you can see them. And you may find that, you know, maybe it's too big, I can't deal with the whole thing, but maybe just cut out a portion of it and move that into the shade or at least something so you have at least pieces of it that are going to tolerate some shade or get some shade at some point. Or you just feel like, you know, this is just not going to work and that little piece of shade isn't going to help all that much. And then you just decide you want to give them away to the neighbors that have some shade or something along those lines.
Yeah.
But you can dig them up, and actually they're amazingly tough, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks. That's okay.
Yeah. Good luck. Yeah. And I think just sort of getting, you know, just figuring out what plants you do have out there and just, it's, you know, some people would just be thanking their lucky stars that their maple tree finally went down I hear people complain about maple trees all the time and how it's so tough to grow things underneath them. So maybe you were blessed in a very odd sort of way.
It is just gorgeous back here. Whatever the heck is growing. I don't know. What are these plants? I don't know what they are. I feel they're like these white Christmas tree shaped flowers at the ends. There's tons of them. I have tons of these plants. I didn't even know I had them. It's beautiful. I've got pink things and purple things and white things, and I don't know what the heck these green things are that I thought was just a twig I was going to pull out. Yeah, it's amazing. So
yeah.
I'm enjoying it very much. I just want to save these poor hostas.
Yeah, and it may be
my ineptitude mainly.
Yeah, and it may be one of those things you really do want to figure out what some of these plants are because you may find that they're actually weeds in the sense that they will just reseed and overtake the area. So I think it's always a good, even if I understand you're enjoying them, but you may decide that, oh my goodness, this is just going to take over my yard and I need to deal with the seeds of these things. So it's a good idea just to get some identification. We can help you at the extension office or certainly online. You can usually do some checking.
Okay, all right,
good luck with that.
Good luck.
Very good. And we'll go on here to another caller. This is Urbana, line number two. Hello.
Hi. My spring project was to start lemongrass from seed. It's now evolved into my summer project as well because I've never found a seed that was more difficult to get going than these. I enthusiastically seeded about 2 packages of seed and got about 15 plants. By trial and error, I've discovered they like lots of sun and not that much water, but now I have about 15 plants that are about 4 to 6 inches tall, resemble blades of grass, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously they're not going to overwinter outside, so now what do I do? I mean, how can I bring them into the house, I presume, have them grow into these stalks I read about in my recipe?
Right, right. And hey, way to go, because I've only seen really lemongrass, you know, using starts from them, you know, just divisions of them. I've never seen anybody try it from seeds. So way to go.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. So, hey, so these are in pots now?
They're in about 2-inch by 2-inch pots.
Okay. You may find that, you know, if they do get a little bit bigger, that may be actually fine size-wise, but you may end up wanting to bump it up to the next size pot
okay.
and then to go ahead and bring them in and grow them on as a houseplant, which you may not have space for.
Yeah, as far as to bring them in, because every time I brought herbs into the house, I end up with a lot of dried herbs.
Yeah, I think probably, well, some of it just depends on what they are. Now, these guys aren't necessarily, they don't necessarily grow all that well indoors, but usually they hang out fine. So I think probably the biggest thing is just, I would wait, you know, as long as you possibly can before it gets really, really cold, before you actually bring them in. I think that's one thing, sort of let them know that it's time to start, you know, gearing down. Just by the, you know, shorter day length and all those kinds of things that help plants to sort of know that it's time to gear down. So I would certainly do that before you bring them in. And then you're probably going to end up bumping them up to the next size pot.
Okay.
And then bring them in.
It was something else just to get them to this size. Because the root system was just sub-diaphanous. I mean, these are the most fragile starts I've ever
had. Now you know why.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, now you know why people starting from divisions rather than seeds.
Oh, I see. Well, okay, didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, it makes me blanch a lot less for paying in the store what you pay for it, because they're quite the trick to get going.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hey, good luck. And I don't know if you have supplemental lighting. That's always a good idea, too. If you
have fluorescent lights or something. I do have a grow light near my hot water heater downstairs. I don't know if that would be good.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Good luck.
Very good. I have a couple other calls here. I have an email here I do want to get in from someone who says they live near a cornfield and the grasshoppers in their yard are running rampant. They seem to be chewing on my plants, or at least the listener says, I'm going to blame them. Is there any way to control them?
Grasshoppers are tough, absolutely tough, because, you know, they move around so much. You know, there's certainly some insecticides that you could use on individual plants. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're not going to go somewhere else and just move on from there. So I will tell you, it's absolutely horrible. It's usually a short period of time. They're usually late enough in the season that usually the plants survive it. It's just an issue of, you know, aesthetically, they're not all that terribly pleasing. So you could use an insecticide like 7 or one of those things. But again, you'd have to try to do everything that they might attack. They eat a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And this, I don't want to scare them, but I actually had them, believe it or not, I actually had them eat my window screens.
No.
I did. Phil Nixon did not believe me, but I watched them eat my window, because they're made out of nylon now. You know, window screens are kind of that nylon
stuff.
Okay. They're not metal ones. That they ate holes in my window screens. You heard it here first.
I'll have to talk with Phil about that.
He didn't believe me.
Now, those aren't the grasshoppers that live over by the nuclear plant, are they?
Really, those real big ones? So grasshoppers are tough, but at least they're late season. There are some, some beneficial nematodes and stuff that are out there. If someone had a perpetual problem, they might want to think about, you know, starting that up. But unfortunately, it's kind of from year to year that they're bad. Some years are worse than others.
Okay. Well, that's the best we can do, I guess.
Sorry. I don't have a good answer for that one.
We also are moving into our last 15 minutes with Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And monthly, on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Next is somebody in McLean County, line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. I have a couple of questions, but the first one I'm going to start with is trees, if you don't mind. Can I ask you a tree question?
Sure.
We have about 5-6 years ago, we got 6 maple trees, and there were 3 different varieties. And 4 of them are in front of our shed. We have a rather long shed. And the one that's the eastmost, and they're north of the shed, well, across from cornfields, soybean fields, it's kind of not done well from the beginning. We thought maybe it was just young. And this year, all the rest are doing great. And as the leaves are turning yellow, the tips of the leaves are curling in, turning black. I've tried to look, and I can't see anything on it. Any idea what I should do?
Are these red maples?
Yeah, I think it's okay. Either red or orange. Yeah, one of those.
Yeah. It sounds like red maple because I see this on red maples from time to time where they'll get a couple of things. They can actually get a thing called leaf hopper burn.
Okay.
And that's just from those little things that jump around. They call them leaf hoppers, but they're kind of little and they jump around. And they actually can just literally, just through their feeding, kind of burns the outside edge of the leaf. That could be one thing. Have you been able to water them through this heat? And
actually, we haven't watered them for the last couple of years because we made it to the three-year mark.
I will tell you that even when, and you're absolutely right, because that's what I just got through saying about 3 years, but you will notice that it's much better if you can go ahead and water them periodically. Red maples in particular seem to be one of those that really suffer when it gets particularly dry.
Okay.
Especially if you're in, it sounds like you're in kind of an open area where maybe you get some wind and those kind of issues. So you may want to water them. Do you have mulched at all, a little wood chip mulch or something?
It is mulch. Could I ask you how much water and how long? Like if you ran the hose at a medium, run, which I know makes nothing, no sense. But if I were to just put the hose on it, how long should I let it run?
Yeah, good question. I'm not sure what to tell you on that one. Usually, if you want to sort of figure that out, you could just take like a 5-gallon bucket, and then put a hole in it, fill the bucket up, and then just let that water go through. So I don't know how long it would take you to fill that bucket, and then just let the water sort of leak out through that bucket. And sometimes that's a good way to do it because then it's a very slow watering and then you've applied 5 gallons.
Oh, so what they really need is 5 gallons.
That's usually pretty good on a smaller tree like that, more than likely.
Okay.
So you just want a thorough wetting of the soil.
Okay. Okay. Anything else I should? So there's nothing we can do for the leaf hopper. The fact that it's turning yellow is probably the water issue.
It's probably a stress issue. Again, if it's one of those things where you could bring a sample into the extension office or take one to the plant clinic, we might be able to give you more indications. But I've certainly seen plenty of red maples that just really suffer through this heat and drought.
Okay. Could I ask you a couple other real quick questions? And this is a follow up. We were talking about grass quite a bit. We have areas where the grass is pretty much dead. Like we have patches, huge patches. We have half an acre, so we have a lot of patches of dead grass. My husband thinks it may have grubs and stuff. When is a good time to put like the weed killers, the stuff you can spray, and how often?
Yeah, well, for grubs, it's really easy to tell if you have grubs or not because you can just pull on, if you just sort of grab the turf and then it will just pull back like a bad toupee. I mean, so you have those areas, you think?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, so grub control could certainly be put on. A lot of the grub, you just really have to look at what product you get. Some of them are actually much better if you can put them on around the 1st of July because it takes a couple weeks for them to go ahead and develop or actually work in the soil. So really watch what chemical that you're getting in there. The other thing, so you may want to, if you want to check for that, that's fine. But generally the 1st of July, as far as other kinds of things, you really need to get on. We have an information sheet that gives you some indication about a lawn maintenance. And a lot of it depends on what you're really looking for, what quality of lawn you're looking for, your sense of quality of a lawn, all those kinds of things. But right now, we're not doing a whole lot on the lawn except for just sort of dealing with maintenance issues. Once we get into August, September, we can certainly, or later on in August and September, you can think about seeding. Weed killer, we're probably looking more at, if you were doing some broadleaves, you're probably looking more like in September and October.
But there's nothing much we can do for the grubs right now then?
You could use a grub control, but I'm just letting you know that generally it's much better earlier in the season than it would be now. But certainly there are grub controls that you can use now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And one last question, if you don't mind. We have these creepy some climbers. They have a heart shape. They're dark in color, and they look like they have white lines or veins in them. And they are growing like crazy everywhere, my vegetable garden, flower garden.
They have lines in the foliage?
Yeah, they look like a heart-shaped leaf.
Right.
It's dark color. It's not the hunter green, but it's like a gray-green. And then looks like white spines on them. It's very decorative and pretty. I think the first one I ever had, I thought it was so gorgeous. And you were right about the other lady. It looks beautiful.
I know. Till later. Yeah, I'm not sure. There's a couple of different plants that have heart-shaped leaves. You know, certainly morning glories have heart-shaped leaves.
Not morning glory. We know that.
It's not morning glory. Bindweed would be another one that has kind of a heart-shaped leaf.
Okay.
Climbing.
Hardy.
Pardon?
They're very hardy in terms of growing.
Yeah, it could be, you know, perhaps bindweed, which is a little smaller leaf than a morning glory. So I have a feeling it's one of those that you either need to bring a sample in, let's figure out what it is, because a lot of it depends on whether it's an annual or a perennial, whether it's going to be a plant that comes back every single year, or whether you just need to deal with the seeds.
Could I ask you a question related to that? Like, you know, Roundup, and I don't know much about, you know, root chemicals. If I were to get like a bottle and spray it at the base of it, will it kill a plant like that?
For many plants, that would work.
Okay. Yeah, I think my guess is this has actually underground roots, and it spreads by roots. It does flower and stuff, but you pull it up, and then you'll notice a little bit later, a few days later, there's another one coming up.
Yeah, yeah. It could very well be bindweed. But,
mm-hmm. Bind?
Yeah, bind, B-I-N-D.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck.
Thanks.
We got an email back from the person who has the grasshoppers and said, thanks, you may not have a solution, but now I have an explanation for the holes in my screen.
See?
She says, I couldn't figure out how this was happening since the screens are new.
See?
So, now, okay, the next time I see Phil,
I'm not the only one. It's wild.
Soon,
I'm telling
you. And we're definitely going to have to talk about that. Oh, let's keep going
I've
here.
I've been vindicated. I feel like I've been vindicated.
Robinson is next, line four. Hello.
Hello, Sandy and David. I've got some tongue-in-cheek advice for the gentleman from Bloomington, Indiana, about his cantaloupe problem. One is to secure two books. I'm sure he already has one of them. The other, he probably doesn't. The first is a book by Darwin in which hybrid vigor is recounted, and it would advise him to buy hybrid seeds.
Yeah. Yeah.
The second is the Bible, which I'm sure he has, so that he can take the Bible's advice to turn his avenging swords into pruning hooks and prune some of the branches away from those trees that are shading out his garden.
Oh.
Thank you.
Sure.
Well, certainly the advice is sound that now we have so many things that are hybrids that you can't take the seeds of those things and plant them and get the same thing back.
Right, right.
So that's why really if you want to grow a particular thing, the best thing to do is, unless maybe you're talking about an heirloom tomato or something, you got to go and get seeds right there specifically for that.
Right. And actually there are, you know, just that whole family, cucurbits of melons and cantaloupe and all those guys, they naturally cross-pollinate. So if they're growing near something that's closely related, they'll cross-pollinate whether you have. So you can find, you know, you certainly can find heirloom varieties where they've grown them specifically for seed. And so they've actually had to put cages over them, believe it or not, to keep out the pollen so they can only... They actually pollinate them by hand, and they can keep out the pollinators so they don't get that cross-pollination. So you can certainly get heirlooms, but it's harder because of that natural cross-pollination that we get with
them. So, I mean, it's a nice thought to want to take the seeds and plant them and see what would happen, but really you're probably better off.
For some things it doesn't work well, and certainly that particular family doesn't work well.
All right. Two, line one, and that's Urbana. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. We cut our lawn, we cut the grass, and everything stays kind of at an even length except for this bright green little stalks of grass that seem to shoot up right behind the lawnmower and are in no time at all 6 inches taller than everything else.
Yeah.
And they're in little patches here and there in the lawn. Any idea what to do about that?
Yeah, I would almost bet it's a fairly wide-bladed grass.
Yeah.
Kind of wide.
You get a hold of it, and you can pretty easily pull out, like, the little section two or three blades at a time.
Right.
But there's way too much to do that.
Oh, I was going to say, that may be your best technique. It sounds like tall fescue, which you can get tall fescue as a turf grass, but then there's this pasture tall fescue that sometimes comes into grass seed or will get into grass seeds, and then when you inadvertently end up planting some of them. And they by themselves, they don't make a bad grass, but they look so different than Kentucky bluegrass. Unfortunately, tall fescue is a perennial grass. It's going to come back every year, that same plant, as you found. So there isn't a whole, you don't have a whole lot of options other than, you know, you can live with it. You can either dig it out, pull it out, whatever, and then come back in and reseed those areas. You could hit it with one of the non-selective herbicides and then go ahead and kill it off that way. You know,
it's going to kill off more than that, isn't it?
Well, you would spot spray. You would just spray those particular plants if you want to go that route. But if you're doing that already, maybe it's just as well to take a shovel and just dig those out. And that might end up being your best bet. So there, unfortunately, that particular grass we don't have very good chemicals that are just going to take care of that grass and not also kill your good grass. So
that's
unfortunately,
sort of what I thought you were going to say.
Sorry.
Thank you very much.
Sorry.
Right. Matt Toon is next here, line number two. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. This spring, early, I planted a 20-foot row about half spinach, half lettuce, and repeated it later, and had pretty good crop. I tried one in June, and just didn't do any good at all. I got a little bit out of it, and I'd like to do a fall crop. Do you have any suggestions on timing on it?
Yeah, actually, with the leafy crops, you can actually wait fairly late, even into September, to go ahead and plant those. So you could certainly wait. You know, I'd probably wait around the 1st of September or so and then go ahead and plant them. Hopefully, it's cool off enough at that point that they'll do pretty well and then go from there. But, yeah, I think people will be surprised how late you can get in. I had spinach clear into December last year. It was still hanging on. So it's pretty amazing how long that stuff will tolerate even just cool temperatures. So it's not too late.
At late September?
You could certainly actually do it. You could start planting in September. You could certainly go ahead and wait a few weeks and then plant another section, you know, kind of stagger it a little bit. And you'd be amazed on how long it lasts. Because most of those are like 60, 65-day crops, I would say probably most of those. You know, just look at the days to harvest. And they'll certainly take it into October without any problem.
One other question. Mm-hmm. I've had a pretty good crop of tomatoes, and I've had one or two plants, but I'm afraid I'm going to lose. I've been watering a couple of times at the base, and I wonder, that's where you're supposed to water tomatoes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And some of them haven't been blooming. I thought they'd continue to bloom, but I thought maybe it's because it started drying out.
Yeah. So they're in full sun, I assume. They have plenty of sun?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're getting plenty of sun. You're absolutely right. You want to water them at the base. You want to try to keep the foliage dry. That helps. I will tell you that when we get temperatures, especially night temperatures, that are as hot as what we've had, a lot of times the flower buds will actually go ahead and abort. They'll just fall off. We see that on tomatoes and peppers both. So don't be surprised if you're not getting a whole lot of flowers and a whole lot of fruit set at this point, because they just don't do well when we have these evening temperatures or as hot as they are right now.
That answers the question.
Yeah, so part of that you really can't do a whole lot about, but usually, you know, let's hope within the next week or so things will back off a little bit and we'll start to get some cooler night temperatures when we start getting back into the 70s. And,
okay,
you know,
thank you.
Then they should start producing again.
All right, very good. And thank you. And to Terre Haute next, line four. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about green manure. I had an outstanding garden for about 10 years, and the last couple of years it just hasn't done anything. And I was wondering if it would perhaps I'm having problems with nitrogen in the soil, if green manure would help. If so, what kind I should use, when I should plant it, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Well, I assume you're talking about some of the, you know, there's any number of things, and I don't know if people are familiar with green manure, but the whole idea is you grow the plant, and then you actually till it in. And so it's green manure, as in you're tilling in this green stuff as opposed to the dead stuff we typically do with compost. And actually, it's a pretty good way to do things. And it depends on, the good part is that because you're talking about it so early in the summer season here, or late summer season, there's all kinds of options. You certainly could do something like buckwheat, actually, is a fairly good one. There's all kinds of, if you should get later on the season, you could do winter rye. There's all kinds of different things along those lines. So I would just find a good one, there's plenty of websites out there. I think actually the sustainability website that the university has. Sorry, and I'm not finding that. I would do some searching, and actually there's some pretty good websites out there on these green manure type crops and when to plant them, because it really depends on what you're planting and how what your process is going to be and when you're going to, whether you're going to till it in or not and all those kind of things, whether you're going to leave it over the winter.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. All right, we'll try to get one more, and there's someone here in Fisher, line one. Hello.
Hi, Sandy. I have a wood chipper and all kinds of branches, and I was wondering if there are any kinds of wood that I should not mulch with.
Well, probably the only thing would be something like walnut or butternut or any of those kind of trees that typically actually can cause some issues with some plants. But those would be the only ones I'd be all that terribly concerned about. So you don't have walnuts and stuff, I'm not sure I worry about it too much with other ones.
Oh, we do. Okay.
Oh, you do have walnuts. Oh, well, yeah. Those I think I would probably put somewhere else. You could certainly let the chips sit for a few years, and then most of those chemicals will actually sort of leach out, but it wouldn't be anything I'd use right away.
Okay, thank you
all right,
so
thanks.
Much.
So that toxin that's in the walnut, that would then end up in your chips and that
right.
would cause that
Right,
cause
and for certain plants, especially things like tomatoes and seedlings of other plants and stuff, they just do not tolerate that very well, those particular toxins that the walnut plants have.
Okay, and in any case, if you're doing that, wouldn't you actually like to have that mulch kind of sit and mature?
You're absolutely
and
right.
Mature?
Ideally, that would be the thing to do, is to go ahead and let it compost. At least, usually we say at least 3 months to let the wood chips compost. I assume since she has a home chipper like that, she's probably not doing large quantities at one time, but you're absolutely right. If you get a big load of it, it was a tree yesterday, and now it's chips, I'd let it compost.
All mm-hmm. right. Well, there, we'll leave it for this time around. Sandy Mason's our guest. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. There are people like her all over the state, so if you want this kind of information, find the person that's near to you, and also you can look for her and other folks on a program that we have called Illinois Gardener. That's Thursday nights at 7 on WILL-TV. It's a live show, and you can also call in and ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you
Absolutely.
Very much.
Sure.
We appreciate it.